on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Sweltering 88 degrees under partly cloudy skies, more like partly cloudy thunderheads. It's just that time of the year here in the temperate rainforest that is Appalachia. You could get rained on, you know, because it's a rainforest. It's nice, though. In the midst of hot and humid, I like to remind myself of things like 15 below for a freaking week last winter, and suddenly the heat ain't so bad. Not at all. Welcome. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go to get access to the chat room. And folks are already wandering in. Anatole is there. Jan and Jerry are there. Jeremy's there. Inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky are there. Yes, indeed. Good evening, one and all. More folks will be wandering by presently. Let's see. Head On Radio Network.com is also where you go to get easy access to the stream. Although we also recommend for your mobile devices, iThis or Smart That, we recommend the apps from TuneIn Radio, where you can find the horn. And we also recommend Stitcher Internet Radio. Your choice. Entirely your choice. And a gentle reminder, should you be subjected to advertising with either of those apps, please know that the horn is in no wise compensated for them. Thank you very kindly. Randy in PA noting loud and clear on my Mac. And Jeremy, loud and clear here on TuneIn. Thank you both very, very much. Now, let's get past this. The horn is what we call listener-supported. And that means that your voluntary contributions, we don't sell anything here. We're not going to charge you for anything. There's no charge for the podcast. There's no charge for access to the stream. You can go and get old episodes at White Rose Society, whatever, and there's no money involved. We're trying to run this on a model that is different from the typical capitalist model. There will be no ads on the horn for buy gold now. There's never been a better time to buy gold high and sell it low. Buy gold now. No, none of that. We don't have any ads for Swedish vacuum cleaner, bowling ball picking up, hair growth, erection formulas. Nope. None of that. It's just us. And it's mostly you. Because for about 10 years now, you're the ones who have kept us on the air. And we don't go out there and say, you know, we don't ask for monumental amounts of money. The minimum amount that we need to get through any given month works out to about $150 per program. And sometimes we hit that mark, and sometimes, well, we don't. It's the don't part that makes the next month a little, and we live from month to month to month. And in this case, we didn't hit the mark last night, so the fundraising goal this evening is $220. That'd be 2 at 110, 22 at 11, 11 at 220. No, 11 at what? I don't know. 11 at 22? 22 at 10? 10 at 22? Yeah, 10 at 22. See what happens with me in the math? It's easy to get lost. 4 at 55? Your choice is fine. But it is, at the end of the day, the only way that this stays on the air. And we are running downhill toward the end of June, at which point we will know whether or not we made it to that minimum amount needed to keep us going. So, PayPal button's right there, at headonradionetwork.com. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And so, too, is the traditional mail address if you prefer to work in that fashion. If you want to go with the mails, just let me know so that I can give a heads up to Boss Man Wayne so he can leave his spider-proof gloves at home when he reaches into the large echo chamber that is otherwise the horn mailbox. Okay? Okay. I despise even talking about all this. Truly, I do. But it's either I talk about this or, you know, we go away. And not like I throw a fit and say, that's it, I'm not doing this anymore. No, all this shit gets turned off. Okay? So, there we go. $220 is what needs to be raised this evening. Now, this evening isn't, well, this is Tuesday. It is the 24th day of June, 2014. We had a magnificent 2 hours of Dr. Bill earlier today. A reminder, Dr. Bill is now going from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. in order to better accommodate our good friend and colleague, Rick Smith, who is now working afternoons. And so, you know, there's a solid block now on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays of horn programming that starts at 1 and goes to 9. And I suggest, especially for everybody in the horn family who was prone and to go and listen to Malloy from 9 to midnight, which is, you know, completely understandable. If you've never heard Rick Smith, you have missed, without a doubt, one of, if not the best, of the next generation of progressive, liberal broadcast pros out there, bar none. And this is your opportunity. And you will not be disappointed. Okay? Okay. Now, it is Titanic Tuesday on the horn. Titanic Tuesday is dedicated, of course, to the titanic intellect that is almost daily manifested to us through various media to let us know just what kind of minds we're dealing with in the right wing, whether it be ordinary repiglickens, and that's, by the way, that's spelled R-E-P-I-G-L-I-K-K-K-E-N-S, repiglickens, or whether it be birthers, deathers, tenthers, birchers, booger eaters, other who live in the booger sphere, or, oh, I don't know, oath keepers, teabaggers, the whole panoply, because they all have titanic intellects. And of course, Titanic Tuesday is named after that one day when a 962nd tier right-wing talker over in Beckley, upon being queried by one of his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking listeners as to why there are shellfish, you know, like, you know, clams, oysters, whatever, scallops, why there are shellfish fossils in the rock strata of West Virginia, and he answered saying that it was as a result of the movement of the Titanic plates. No word yet on the movement of the Titanic soup bowls. I hear it was lovely china, though. So that's where that comes from. Exactly, Anatole. Anatole in the chat room. Knuckle-dragging booger eaters. But you missed one. It's mouth-breathing knuckle-dragging or knuckle-walking, because they really are walking. Mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking booger eaters of the Repiglican Party. R-E-P-I-G-L-I-K-K-K-E-N-S. Repiglicans. Just so that we're all on the same page. But it is Titanic Tuesday on the horn. And we've got several options of manifestation of Titanic intellect, but this one just jumped out for me because it has such potential. The Kansas City Star, which is a newspaper of long standing in that community, I believe they were one of the first reporting jobs that a young Ernest Hemingway ever had. He was doing the police blotter and that kind of thing, all that, you know, that cub reporter stuff. The Kansas City Star is reporting that teachers in schools, public schools, which use public tax dollars, teachers in public schools in Missouri will be sending their teachers into the classroom next fall armed to the teeth. Or, in another phrase, all gunned up. Now, in a related story, there is no word yet on whether the women people, whether the women people teachers will be wearing the fancy new gun bra. No, really. That's all this whole controversy is marketing. Granted, it's wrapped in a bloody flag and with things like patriotism and freedom and Wolverines written all over it, but it's marketing. It is marketing, pure and simple. It's a way to sell crap, whether the crap be guns or things to go with guns. And yes, there is a brand new, and it's all stretchy and lacy, and it comes in pretty colors, whether it be a bright red or a pretty pastel pink or, you know, something sort of daring in a black stretch lace thing, and it's the women people are supposed to stick their shooting guns, their freedom protectors, down in it, and then when the bad guy shows up, they reach into their gun bra, and oh dear. So we don't know if any of the, and I don't, if a guy wears one of these, is there a cross-dressing transgender issue involved? We have no idea. We don't know, for instance, if, no, stop it, I'm not going to go any further with that. But no, teachers will be going into Missouri classrooms next year armed to the teeth. What do you mean you forgot your homework? Huh? What do you mean the dog ate it? Did you forget it? Or did the dog eat it? Which is it, punk? Yeah. At least 10 school districts in Missouri have already shelled out $17,500 per district. And 3 more districts have already signed up with a company called Shield Solutions. Now, for that $17,500, Shield Solutions have trained 2 staffers from each of 10 districts. Wait, we know how bad I am with math on the fly. 17. That's $175,000. To train 20 people. And once they've been trained, what a beautiful racket this is, the 2 trained staffers then also become employees of Shield Solutions. Wait a minute. Do I have to do this?
Shield Solutions.
Wolverines.
And they get paid in addition to their regular teacher's salary. Now, here's the fun part. The head guy, the founder of Shield Solutions, is a former Missouri Highway Patrol officer by the name of Greg Martin. Okay. He has said that he envisions the role of teachers in Missouri's schools as being like unto air marshals on aeroplanes. And he expects it to dramatically reduce the number of shootings in Missouri schools because, well, how many hijackings have we had since 9/11, huh? Huh? Answer me that, smart liberal. How many hijackings since 9/11? Is one to understand from this query that Mr. Greg Martin of Shield Solutions Vinyl Repair, no, Armor All, no, that there were no air marshals before 9/11? I could have sworn there were. Yeah. So, $175,000 plus for former trooper Greg Martin, and he's gonna train teachers to know how to shoot the bad guy with their good guy gun, and to hopefully do it so as not to wind up shooting any precious young scholars. And they're going to use special bullets. Shield Solutions says that teachers are going to use a different kind of round that it's supposed to lodge inside the soft tissue of the first human body it hits, which is great if it's the bad guy, not so great if it's little Cindy from the third row from the right, three desks back. The training program is about 5 days. And in order to graduate, and this is where it becomes Titanic Tuesday material, in order to graduate from Shield Solutions, you have to be able to score a 90 to 95% accuracy rate with your freedom protecting firearm. Well, you know, at first blush, that sounds great. I mean, that's a pretty high accuracy rate. I mean, you stand there on the range and you draw your freedom protector out of your brightly colored lacy gun bra and blam 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 blam, and you empty the clip, and they go up and they say, hey. You got a 90%, you pass. Because that means that you hit the target within a specified area 90 to 95% of the time, non-moving target, stationary, probably made of paper, at the end of a specified distance shooting range. Anybody bothered yet? According to the Kansas City Star article, teachers have told reporters that, by God, they're ready to shoot one of their own students if they have to. One of the Shield Solutions trainees said, well, none of us would be here if we haven't already answered that question. I'll blow his little freaking brains all over the wall. No, the teacher didn't say that. So, 90% accuracy. 90% accuracy. That means that according to Shield Solutions, for the price of $17,500 for two school staffers, that they will guarantee that that staffer can hit what that staffer is shooting at as long as the target is standing absolutely still and not moving. 9 times out of 10. 9 times out of 10. On the 10th time, well, little Timmy just gets scattered all over the lockers, that's all. Then the janitor has to bring the mop and the bucket. I always thought that janitor had the worst job in the school. But those other 9 times, as long as the target is standing perfectly freaking still, they're gonna stop. The good guy with the gun will stop the bad guy with the gun. And this is all gonna be done by teachers. Teachers who, because Missouri did make sure that it's okay for teachers to carry guns into schools. Teachers who were maybe up late grading papers, when teachers do that, they're not on the clock. Teacher salaries do not take into account all the stuff that we expect them to do. Planning classes, no. Grading papers, no. Going out and using money out of their own pockets to buy school supplies? No. And now they're, I don't know. So the state of Missouri will not subsidize teachers for things that the school doesn't supply. Maybe extra crayons, tracing paper, things like that. What do you want to bet the state of Missouri will, by God, compensate the teachers for the money they spend on bullets? You think? So, the teacher is tired from having been up grading papers late into the night, maybe early into the morning. He or she got very little sleep, and when she had to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and get ready and get to school by 7, so she's operating on 4 or 5 hours worth of sleep. She is gonna be primed to hit 9 out of 10 targets every time, as long as the bad guy with the gun is standing perfectly still at a specified range and isn't. Right, not firing or anything, because teachers are that awesome. I mean, we trust our children with them, right, every day. And all teachers are going to be that good. And teachers who can only hit the stationary target 8 times out of 10, which would mean that little Timmy and little Cindy would wind up splattered all over the back of the classroom. Well, they're not going to get to carry their gun to school. But only if you're going to kill 1 kid out of 10, 10 out of 100, 100 out of 1,000, that'll be fine. That's just great. Oh, God Almighty. Homeschooling? Anyone? And I don't favor homeschooling. But yeah. Jim. Jim with an email. Basic combat training for teachers. What next? Well, maybe next summer they'll start shooting at things that are moving. And maybe after that there'll be some live fire exercises with somebody shooting at them. Maybe as they crawl under some among some school desks or something, and people shooting real bullets over people's heads. Tim from L.A. with a question. Speaking about arming teachers, since public schools receive federal aid, aren't there rules banning firearms on federally funded institutions? Not sure. Wouldn't bet on it. Wouldn't it be easier to hire police officers or deputies on campus? Well, that's anticipated, Tim, because our buddy Mr. Martin over at Shield Solutions, he knows that the bad guy with the gun is going to look for those targets. They'll try to take out the school security, so this is like double secret sneaky having gunned up teachers that nobody knows about because bad guys never read the Kansas City Star. Oh, Jesus. Tim continues, every police officer I know needs to go to the academy to qualify with their firearm, sometimes once every 2 months or even twice a year, depending on the firearm, which means the school district will have to fork out millions of dollars. Final question, who's going to pay for this? Do you really need to ask? The suckers, I mean taxpayers. So you get do you know anybody? Do you have any friends or neighbors or loved ones out in Missouri, Stan? Make sure they know about this, please. And now the bad guys will also know that some teachers are carrying guns. So they'll treat the teachers with it. In other words, the teachers just got a target painted on them. And maybe it'll just be two or three teachers, but then people will start wondering, well, I don't want to get shot at and not have a gun to shoot back with. I'm gonna get certified too. I mean, hell, I got certified to teach English to ninth graders. How hard could this be? And then all the teachers will have guns. Which means that the bad guy will maybe start working the Harrison Klebold side of the street and not just be thinking about guns, but maybe some bombs into the bargain. Or improvised explosive devices, as we've been taught to refer to them since we decided to make war against the people of Iraq and Afghanistan, who never did anything to us. Just had to get that in there. In how many different ways is this an exercise in absolute stupidity? But you know what? It doesn't matter. Because this isn't about saving students' lives. This is about selling guns and bullets. And it's about making a horse-gagging load of money for Greg Martin of Shield Solutions. The whole gun controversy in this country isn't about freedom or patriotism. It is about selling guns by any means necessary. I mean, the American Association of Retired Persons, AARP out there, they purport to be all about the well-being of older Americans, right? But anybody who's ever joined know that about the only damn thing AARP does is sell insurance. Welcome to that model. The National Rifle Association is supposedly about protecting gun owners' rights. But what they're really about is selling guns. Advancing the capitalist model embraced by gun manufacturers, and for which the NRA is handsomely compensated The NRA doesn't give a damn if little Timmy and little Cindy get blown into their various constituent parts all over the back of the classroom. Hell no! That's good. That's actually good for business from the NRA standpoint. It makes more people go buy guns out of a paranoid knee-jerk reaction. Jeremy in Vermont pointing out, yep, still don't want or need a gun here. Robert in Australia, subject line, crikey, Bob. Well, you're telling me, Robert. When teachers have to carry guns in schools, you know your culture, your society is pretty much over. Yeah, yeah. Even in the Old West, the school marm wasn't gunned up. And we don't have a bunch of stories out of American history of all the kids or bad guys with a gun or whatever who blew away the school marm. This is all marketing. This is all flim-flam. This is all a long con. Marty with a good question. I wonder what happens should the teacher, contractor, get a layoff notice or be denied tenure, if, of course, tenure still exists. I wonder what happened then. Well, that is why, Marty, that's why the distinction between a lawful gun owner and an awful gun owner is so very narrow. How many millimeters must a trigger travel before it engages the firing pin to strike the primer, the cap, in a bullet, and send the bullet hurtling down the barrel at something in excess of 900 feet per second? That's the distance between lawful gun owner and awful gun owner. Those very few millimeters and those very few pounds of trigger pull. Had a story in the news over the weekend. It comes, of course, from Florida, Stan. A man and his wife were welcoming home their brand new baby girl. Just came home from the hospital. I remember those days. With our first one, I was scared to death. I was scared to hold her. Afraid I might break her. Just brought home their brand new baby girl when the freedom protector next door, who had gotten his Seth liquored up, picked up his pistol by the trigger, at which point the pistol went off and the bullet pierced a couple of walls and killed the brand new daddy.
Wolverines!
You know, for freedom. Because that man was a patriot. The cops showed up and he tried to hide the pistol in the couch. That didn't work. And then he said, that damn gun never fires. Usually you got to pull the trigger a hell of a lot harder than that. Imagine that moment, if you dare. Go to that place in your imagination if you can stand to. Your baby is a couple of days old. You're filled with the wonder of it all. And, of course, at the same time, you're filled with the, oh, my God, now I've got college to pay for. Jesus. Oh. I wonder if we're going to breastfeed or are we going to use formula? And if we're going to use formula, are we going to use the regular stuff? Or are we going to go with soy? I wonder if she's going to want to be a vegetarian. I can't wait till she can walk and talk and we can. I can't wait to bang dead daddy because the NRA needs to sell more goddamned guns. Wow. What? Irish Dave with a note. In the land of cheeses and crackers, a.k.a. South Carolina, Sally Atwater, widow, silver lining, of Lee Atwater, has said that as a shield solution, she would be eager to shoot students and teachers from her exalted position as superintendent of education. I think Irish Dave is being funny, but I'm not entirely certain because it's entirely believable. Rock-a-bye daddy in the casket. Oh, yuck. Jan in the chat room. Hockey pucks! Get your hockey pucks here. Got your hockey pucks. Hockey pucks, ready and fresh. Here's your hockey pucks. Ay, ay, ay. Mother. Note coming in from our dear sister Jude. Schools and guns? How about a creative summer reading program? Well, in Kansas, Stan, it appears the answer is no. I saw this earlier today, too. Thanks, Jude. Now, if this kid had wanted to sit on a bench by his driveway with a gun, maybe. I mean, he's 9 years old and everything. This is in eastern Kansas, Stan. Leawood, Kansas, to be precise. And it's a story from KMBC about a young boy named Spencer Collins. He loves reading, young Spencer does. And he set up, and I had no idea this movement even existed, but what a neat little idea it is. It's called the Little Free Library Movement. It's been around since 2009. Todd Bowl of Western Wisconsin built a mailbox-like structure, this according to Think Progress, in which Todd Bowl put books. And then he set it up in his front yard with a sign that said, take a book, return a book. Since 2009, the idea of little free libraries have popped up literally. Well, okay, careful with that word literally, Bob. But there's a lot of them around the world. So, this past May 11th, Spencer Collins of Leawood, Kansas, Stan. Remember, Kansas, that tried to enshrine the teaching of intelligent design, which is neither intelligent nor a design. You know, anybody with an appendix can, or who's ever had an appendix taken out can speak to both issues. He set up his own little free library. It lasted for about a month. That's when the city of Leawood's city hall wrote a letter to Mama and Daddy telling them that, by God, that little library was violating the zoning ordinances of the city of Leawood, and it has to be taken down or we will fine you! Because in Leawood, Kansas, apparently it's one of those little snotty communities, zoning ordinances prohibit citizens there from having structures on their property that are not directly attached to the actual house. Richard Coleman is a city official, and Richard Coleman said, "Well, we had to do it. We had to do it because we have to treat everybody the same. We'd had two complaints about it. I mean, we like the little libraries." Okay, so that's the equal protection of the law, right? The law is the law. In about 15 seconds, I'll get an email from somebody quoting Shakespeare, "The law is an ass." But that's the part of that story that grabbed me earlier, Jude. The two complaints we received. Who does that? Who are the shit weasels who dropped a dime on the little guy for setting up a little free library so people could read books for free? And you know, his little free library had children's books in it. It's not like he had Henry Miller's Tropic of Cancer in there or Lady Chatterley's Lover or Naked Lunch. No. He had A Wrinkle in Time. He had a book by Roald Dahl. And two people, and what do you want to bet? They're neighbors or something. Those awful, awful people. "Well, what about our property values? Oh, God, Muffy, the property values are sinking by the moment. That child is ruining life in our otherwise lovely neighborhood." Pricks. Now, if he had a structure set up that was like a mailbox and it had NRA flyers in it, the NRA would come flying to his defense. "Well, this young man's just trying to teach people about gun safety. And our precious heritage of freedom as embodied by the Second Amendment." And then the Leawood, Kansas City Council would jump into session real quick and craft a loophole for the young man so that he could protect freedom. Don't you think? Want to bet? See, those are those little experiments that would be fun to set up. Little Spencer Collins could set himself up a little tiny structure with firearm stuff in it. And then just watch the NRA jump to it, and then watch the Leawood City Council absolutely collapse like a house of cards. Jim noting, "I guess the lemonade stands are next, right?" Well, those aren't permanent structures. Lemonade stand, you set it up, at the beginning of the day, you take on at the end of the day, so it's not a permanent structure. Thing is, young Spencer Collins wanted to leave it up so people could get a book, leave a book, get a book, leave a book, anytime, day or night. And that qualified it as a permanent structure not attached to the principal dwelling. Which then triggered the necessity to keep chaos and anarchy from breaking out in a neighborhood in Leawood. Oh. Our buddy Michael in Madison is working overtime. Little free library? Better yet, the little free armory. Take a gun, leave a gun.
Wolverines.
Irish Dave, too, also, free speech for the NRA. Kevin in Colorado Springs. But if the kid had done this and made that damn little library a patriotic capitalist library, charging folks for the privilege of reading his books and then returning them, they would have called it all good and capitalistic. Goes under the category of because money, and training the kids on how to make money like that is all too important, especially if the kid would have maybe had a couple of AK-47s for sale on the side, sort of an impulse buy thing, you know, right there by the cash register. Then it would all be good, and the people who complained about his library wouldn't have had a thing to say other than, good job! True. Although there might be a zoning ordinance about running a business. See, that's probably where the complainers started.
Well, we've got zoning laws here to protect our property values against running a business in our lovely, lovely little corner of heaven that we call our little subdivision. What? He's not selling the books? Damn.
Oh, we are going to have a busy little evening, aren't we? We could save this one for prayer meeting Wednesday, but we ain't. I used to save stories for prayer meeting Wednesday, thinking that there might not be enough churchy stories by the time Wednesday rolled around. I have since learned that the abusive church stories ye have always with ye. And since thus far we've been talking about Missouri and Kansas, let's stay there, this time in Joplin. The Ignite Church. Okay. That's nice. That must be one of those non-denominational cults of personality. Yeah. The Ignite Church. Well, it's all decorated in neon green with black stripes and nobody ever wears a suit or a dress to church because they're not formal that way. And they're just trying to reach people for Jesus. Yeah, sure. Why not?
Hey, guys. Pastor Heath here. Just wanted to give you a quick update. We are in the middle of our Taking Ground series. Been awesome so far. This last Sunday, we had a party out on the patio. It was awesome, incredible. Can't wait to preach a message on excellence this week. And so be sure that you're here. It's also Father's Day. That's kind of what I want to talk to you about. Everybody's excited. Rightfully so, because we made the announcement that we are giving away an AR-15 to a lucky father on Father's Day. And the overwhelming response to this has been incredible. And so we was actually kind of more than what we was anticipating. So we just did what we do well. And we responded to the overwhelmingness of the situation. And so we thought, crap, a lot of people are going to be ticked. And how are we going to do this? Are we giving it away first experience or second experience? And the truth is, we're not telling you. But what we are going to tell you right now is that we're going to give away two of these stinking guns. You know why? Because we can, and we're awesome like that. And we actually have a lot of good friends that stepped up to the plate in this. And so, you know, we are giving away a Smith & Wesson AR-15. To somebody. But that really is just kind of like breadcrumbs. Like, you can kill a weak zombie with that thing. But if you really want to double tap a zombie in style, you're going to want our grand prize. And our grand prize, you ready for this? Is a Black Rain AR-15 from our good friends down at Black Rain Ordnance right here in Neosho, Missouri. And so these guys make incredible weapons. I actually own one myself. It is my favorite weapon, period, hands down. This is the Lamborghinis of AR-15s. And so we're giving away Sunday. So that's not one, but two. When are we giving it away? Sunday. You got to be at church. If you haven't signed up yet, we're actually going to open back up registration. And so get your butts to church. If you're late, don't cry to me that you're a pansy and you cannot set your alarm. All right? You're a big boy. You got big balls between your legs. You're a dad, right? Get up. Set your alarm. Don't be a wuss. Get to church. Register, because we're giving away a Smith & Wesson AR-15. And then the grand prize is to one lucky dude. You're going to be the proud owner of a Black Rain AR-15 this Sunday. I also want to say that some of you might be feeling screwed right now because you're like, I did exactly what you said, and I came to church last Sunday, and I signed up, yada, yada, yada. Well, guess what? You're awesome. So you get to sign up again, so you get to double your chances to win, and so you got twice the opportunity as all these other chumps that decided to stay home last week, you know? So good looking out, kid. It's awesome. Keep doing the right thing. You make America proud, and Uncle Sam's proud, and Jesus just had a little tear because he's so proud of you. Awesome. Keep coming to church. Don't be late. Share this video with your friends. Actually, don't share it with anybody, because that's the less people that'll show up to church. More chances for you to win. Don't try to rig it either. We got security with Black Rains. So, anyways, peace.
I don't know if I can handle that by myself. I'm gonna need phone calls. 304-574-8178. Where do you begin? To deconstruct that garbage. I couldn't help noticing the use of the word pansy. If you're late, don't cry to me that you're a pansy and you can't set your alarm, all right? You're a big boy. You got big balls between your legs. You're a dad, right? Anybody want to go running through the testaments? No. Let's limit ourselves to Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi. Finally, the passage where he says the kingdom of heaven is comprised of getting a goddamn gun. Jim's banging on all eight cylinders this evening. Ignite church? What the hell do they use for communion? C4? Oh my God! Luda is apparently not okay right now. Really? Says Luda. Oh my effing God, that was the greatest, stupidest thing I've ever heard. Who knew church could be that lame? Ay, 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 ay. Let me check in the chat room, see if they're screaming. Yeah, okay, chat room, how many of you bit through the hockey puck? Body in the chat room says, I'd love to see a gay dad win that gun. Lottie also noting, Bob, the more they do that, the more we win. Question came in from Jay Cruz, and hey, Bob, didn't Joplin get their asses handed to them by an F5 climate change tornado recently? Well, I don't wish that on people, but maybe it missed a few it should have taken with it. And see, I know Jesus is forgiving and everything, but when he talks about how it's so awesome that they're giving away a Black Rain AR-15, and Uncle Sam says, yay, in America, and Jesus just cried a little tear, I'll bet Jesus did just cry a little tear. Hey, son, you think it might be time for you to go back?
No effing way, Dad! It was bad enough they're walking around with crosses around their necks. Now they're... Oh, no, Dad.
You sure, son?
Absolutely, Dad. You fooled me the last time. I did it. Dad, come on. It's been a couple of thousand years. I've grown up a little bit, all right?
Irish Dave's sorting it all out. So, blah rain is to discourage pansies from church attendance? Jeremy's gnawing on the hockey puck.
Wait, what's Edith, huh?
Ignite church Father's Day and two life takers and don't rig it, we'll kill your effing ass with our AR-15s.
Yeah.
Jude noting, and probably they wrote this or did the video either before or after accepting communion. You know, body and blood. Dan asking the important existential question, and I mean really, really existential, who would Jesus shoot? Now, see, this is where you get into real theological shifting sand. Let's say you win the Black Rain AR-15 or won it. I mean, it's over. It's past now, I guess. Or maybe let's say you just won the lame Smith & Wesson AR-15. Then, in order to enter the kingdom of heaven and follow Jesus, don't you have to sell it and give the proceeds to the poor? You know, poor old Ignite Church. Now, these super modded up AR-15s from Black Rain probably have a pretty high price tag on them. If you are following Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, and you're all into that render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's business, are you going to report your Black Rain AR-15's value on your income taxes? Huh? Anybody? Yeah. Really, Irish Dave? Dude over there at National Association for Gun Rights, Nagger, no really, is giving away a 50 caliber because the NRA is a wussy organization. Oh, mother. I think we could work this story for a very, very long time. Kate, do you notice? I let the audio roll all the way through, and I didn't even interrupt the guy. Thanks going out to Kate, who got us started and took us down to $200 to go for fundraising for this evening, and Jay Cruzen, who then got us... got us down to $100 to go for fundraising this evening. So anybody wants to step up and stand with Jay Cruzen and Kate, you're more than welcome to. Backing up to the Little Free Libraries for a moment, Michael and Madison pointed out, on a more serious note, since I moved back to Madison, I've noticed Little Free Libraries everywhere. When I was staying with a friend on the east side, there was one at the entrance to his condo complex. Now that I have my own house on the west side, there's one right across the street. Pretty neat idea. Didn't know it started in Wisconsin. Did I hear that right? You did, out in western Wisconsin, which I have run around a little bit. I am just crazy fond of River Falls, Wisconsin. It just feels like America. Michael continues, and where to begin with the totally awesome church dude giving away the AR-15s for Father's Day? Right. Sorry, says Michael. I got nothing. God damn. And a query from Kate. Why do you need phone calls? This is one time to leave this one to stand alone, sort of a no-comment segment. This one tops the worst of the worst. Just no comment from here. The words fail me. And the same, and Kate, the same thing happened to me. I wanted to make sure that if others had, that they could jump in. Guns for Jesus. By the way, because the goddess of irony never, never, never takes even so much as a second off, the guy who did what you just heard from the Ignite Church, I mean, go down south. How do you even name a church Ignite Church? You reckon this guy would be leading Ignite Church if it was in Birmingham, Alabama? Because they kind of have a history with that. No, the goddess of irony, this guy in the audio that you heard. Yeah, his name is Pastor Heath Mooneyham. Mm-hmm. Some people in Joplin are not as bloodthirsty as Pastor Keith Mooneyham. One pastor at another church in Joplin said the rifle raffle is, quote, careless and reckless. Another Joplin resident said God does not condone guns, violence, or war. But you know what? These people, these right-wingers, these gundamentalists, these ammosexuals, they won't take that lying down. Pastor Mooneyham, follower of the Prince of Peace, said, "People are crazy, period. Murder's been going on since the beginning of time. I mean, the first murder in history occurred when Cain killed Abel with a rock. These are law-abiding, lawful gun owners. You know what? I'm going to have to start when I see stories about specific firearms. I'm going to have to start looking up the specs on them and find out what the trigger travel distance is in millimeters or maybe micrometers. I don't know. Before it engages the firing pin to strike the shell. Because that's going to be the... And then there's the larger question of just what the F anybody needs with one of these weapons. I watched a documentary last night called Korangal. It's the follow-up to Restrepo. And many of you are already familiar with Restrepo. It got big coverage. Story of an outpost in the Korangal Valley of Afghanistan. You can't really watch the films and be okay. They're not presented with an axe to grind on either side. They are truly documentary films. They are films that stand as documentary witnesses to a specific time and place. And in this time and place is a remote valley in Afghanistan watching a group of American young men with a unit of the United States Army holding down an outpost and what they went through. And there's a segment of a firefight. They're standing there behind their sandbags and they're shooting machine guns and small arms fire and grenade launchers and that kind of stuff. And they're screaming the whole time. You know, die, you MFers. And I sat there watching, because by the end of the program, I wind down a little bit, I listen to Malloy, and quite often I'm not unwound enough that it takes a while to get to sleep. I mean, 9 p.m. is my 5 p.m. And so I watched that documentary. And I thought about why those young men were there. Because there's a whole bunch of hurry up and wait involved, and they throw rocks at each other, and they haze each other, and they beat on each other. I was looking at the topography, and I was like, you know what they needed over there? A whole bunch of hillbillies. Because you had people that are going, man, you can do your push-ups and all your PT, and you can be ready, 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 and you ain't ready for these mountains. And I just thought about what a crime it was that we sent them there in the first place. I remember saying a very long time ago that we lost in Afghanistan, but from the moment we decided to start. Apparently, we have a new gospel of violent Christ. That loves to give his followers the kind of firearms that were used to chew children into tiny pieces at Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown, Connecticut. That's what the loving Christ does now. I mean, even in the Southern Baptist church that I grew up in Alabamistan, no one would have ever thought of giving away a firearm. I know people who are awesome hunters. I mean, one shot deer, you know, deer stalkers. And the people I grew up around would never have taken an assault rifle on a deer hunt. Or B, taking an assault rifle to go and pick up a gallon of juice at the Wally World. Jeremy pointing out, Bob, it's goddamn deer and bear's fault. They've evolved too far and can outrun and outgun the old shotgun slugs. We need the AR-15s to take a stand. Kill the deer. Freedom! On and on and on it goes. Black Rain Ordinance is the subject line from Tim from L.A. Black Rain? Gee, Tim says. I wonder if this corporation knows that Black Rain or Kuroame was the radioactive soot that fell on the victims of Hiroshima after they were bombed on August 16th, 1945. My aunt died of cancer because of the black rain. Gee, coincidence? Oh, my God, he's provided pictures. Oh, here are the rifles and costs and pink upper receivers for girls. Oh, I think it's not just for girls. Let's not be sexist. Yeah, I think these here Black Rain AR-15s going to have to go on the old 1040. The Bro PG-1 has a pink camo receiver. MSRP 2039. And then there's the Bro PG-1 piston, and that goes up by $350 to $2389. The Bro PG-2 is all in a sort of desert tan, $2439. The Bro PG-2 piston, or is that piston? Not sure. MSRP $2799. Then there's your black Bro PG-3. $2379 PG-3 piston, $2779 the PG-4. They have different stocks. But, oh, and there's my favorite, the Bro PG-11 Pink Splash. PG-11 18, $2729. Lord God, this goes on forever, Tim. PG-12 1220, PG-13, entirely new meaning for that. And the Bro PG-16 FDE MSRP $28.99 in the name of Jesus! Ignite Church, says Jim. Guess Albert Anastasia of Murder, Inc. would love to join. Ooh-wee! Yeah. So, here endeth the first hour and 15 minutes of the program. We'll take a break and jump up some more Titanic intellect from the right wing. Your calls are, of course, welcome. 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. Remember, there is only one phone line, not the six that we ordinarily have. 304-574-8178. So if somebody's on the line, you know that you're not going to get your call answered until the other person has gone off the line, internet latency being what it is. The Green News Report is on the way. Green News Report is on the way with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. This is listener-supported conversation radio. We're only $100 away from getting even with this young week. Thank you very much to Kate and to Jay Cruzen for making it so. You can join in with them shoulder to shoulder if you so wish, and it would be great if you did. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be right back.
June 24, 2014.
The issue has been settled. EPA does have the authority. The law says so. The Supreme Court has said so twice.
Make that three times. The U.S. Supreme Court upholds EPA authority again. It's official. May 2014 was the hottest May on record. Canada's First Nations vow to fight the other tar sands pipeline. Plus,
until today, we've had no ways to measure the serious risks to our national economy that it faces from climate change.
Titans of Wall Street warn climate change is really expensive.
All of those warnings and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
CO2 is a different kettle of fish. It's not particulate. It's plant food.
That is the single most charming way I have ever heard someone say something so wrong.
Republican Congressman Jeff Sessions from Alabama is wrong? Say it ain't so. This is your Green News Report.
He is wrong, but he is adorable. He is wrong-dorable.
Okay, Desi Doyen, the hottest May on record, that's impossible. Fox News has just today told me that the globe has actually been cooling since the 1930s. So what new numbers are you faking now?
Oh, if only that were true. That's the problem with getting your news from Fox so-called news. May 2014 was the hottest May ever recorded on the entire planet, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Fakers.
Beating the old record for the hottest May set just 4 years ago. The ocean also set a new high temperature record for the month of May. Forecasters predict that the record ocean warming is on track to contribute to what may be a super exceptional El Nino event coming up this winter.
So just to clarify 2 points, that hottest May on record, that's globally, right?
Yes.
Not here in the U.S.
Right.
Because, you know, on Fox News, when it's a little chilly in the U.S., they think the entire world is freezing. Second question, you refer to the ocean temperatures. This is something that, again, the folks on Fox News seem not to notice when they say either the globe is cooling, which it's not, or the growth of warming is slowing a bit. It may be slowing a bit, but only on surface temperatures. Those numbers don't take into account the oceans, which are warming.
Right. That would be willful blindness of trying to ignore inconvenient data. Meanwhile, the U.S. Supreme Court has reaffirmed, yet again, the Environmental Protection Agency's authority to regulate carbon dioxide emissions that cause global warming. It was a complicated split decision on Monday, but the upshot is that while the conservative wing of the court did slightly limit the potential emission sources the EPA could regulate under the Clean Air Act, they took out tiny emitters like schools and small businesses, which the EPA was hoping to avoid anyway, but the majority of the court again upheld the EPA's broad authority to regulate emissions from large industrial polluters, refineries, factories, and power plants, by far the biggest emitters. And this is the third time the Supreme Court has had to do this, and it's probably not the last.
So again, to clarify, these big polluters go to court. They say carbon dioxide is not a pollutant, or at least it's not a pollutant you can regulate. The Supreme Court says yes, and yes, and yes, you can.
That's right.
And in fact, you must, because it's part of the Clean Air Act, so you must regulate these emissions.
That's right.
Got it.
And the risk that climate change poses to every sector of the economy is finally beginning to dawn on Wall Street.
If we act immediately, we can avoid the very worst outcomes. And American business needs to lead in this area.
That's former U.S. Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson at the press conference launch on Tuesday for a new report, the first ever to calculate the impact of climate change on the U.S. economy, called Risky Business. It's a joint project between Paulson, former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, and billionaire philanthropist Tom Steyer. As Mayor Bloomberg says, this new report makes the true cost of global warming quite clear.
Until today, we've had no ways to measure the serious risks to our national economy that it faces from climate change. Our report shows that the longer we wait to adapt to and mitigate climate change, the more devastating the economic impacts will be. And we just cannot afford to wait another minute.
Some of the more dramatic findings include that by the end of the century, high temperatures could make it extremely difficult for people to work outside at all during heat waves.
Well, pretty sure Michael Bloomberg and Hank Paulson work indoors, so they don't need to worry.
And yet they are.
Go figure.
Finally, the First Nations Indian tribes in Canada are girding up for a huge fight. While the controversial proposed Keystone XL pipeline remains stalled in the U.S., Canada's conservative government has approved another pipeline, the Northern Gateway, set to transport Canada's dirty tar sands oil across British Columbia to be shipped to China. Canada's indigenous tribes, the First Nations, have vowed they will fight the pipeline going over their land with lawsuits and direct action, saying it violates their constitutional rights. The leaders say, quote, we are the wall that the pipeline cannot pass.
For much more on those stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
One gets the sense that Brad and Desi have that same old DJ urge that strikes me from time to time. Nice call using the wall there with the First Nations quote. Very, very nice. This is the Horn, 24 minutes past the hour of 7 o'clock here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone, now that the days have begun to wane toward the grim, dark cold of winter. Yeah, see, that's how I am. Everybody's like, yay, happy summer solstice. I think I'm actually happier on the winter solstice because that means the days start getting longer. Now they start getting shorter. God, am I a half glass half empty guy or what? Oh well, let's engage the conversation radio portion of the program. Hey, welcome to the program.
Wow.
Indeed.
The Ignite Church.
Yeah, I take it that doesn't settle well with you, Jim.
Not really, no. But, I mean, who is this guy? And where is he located now? I'm sorry, I must have missed something.
He's in Joplin, Missouri, and he is at the Ignite Church. And the Ignite Church is one of these non-denominational affairs that, and they're all, their sanctuary is painted in green and black stripes. And
charming.
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to hear any old timey church music there. I mean, they've probably got a better sound system than Kiss does on tour.
Probably. I mean, gunfire does make great music, you know. It's just wonderful.
It'll sure wake the deacons up if they start snoozing.
You know, that's just the craziest thing I have ever heard in my life, and I've heard some crazy things. And I've spent most of my life dealing with people who live in the house of crazies, but that's got to be a real topper.
But bear in mind, maybe I didn't mention this, this is not an original idea on the part of Ignite Church. I first read about this, a year or so ago? Maybe it was Mother's Day or Easter or something, where some church in Kentucky was trying to drum up a congregation and was giving away shooting guns?
No, I didn't hear about that, but, I mean, now they have women's ladies' colors, too.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
It was
just a couple of weeks ago that the Freedom Protector in Arizona was tucking, he had forgotten his own Freedom Protector, but his wife's was in the car, and it was a pink Smith & Wesson semi-automatic, and he went to stick it down the waistband of his pants because he had to go in and buy some cottage cheese and maybe a can of soup, and you never know what's going to happen in the soup aisle, and he stuck the pink Smith & Wesson in the waistband of his pants and shot his schmeckle off.
Oh, dear. Well, I just wonder if they could do for him what they did for John Bobbitt, but I don't give a damn. I guess Donatella Versace is going to get on this, too, and have a fashion show in which the models are wearing the respective types of weaponry in different types of pastels and, different, you know.
Okay, I'm not kidding here, Jim. You don't know how far this stuff extends. There was a short-lived hunting supply store in the shopping center that houses our Wally World in Fayetteville. And a couple of years ago, I went in there looking for a pair of hunting boots, or, you know, cold weather boots. I can't stand for my feet to be cold in winter. And I thought, okay, well, I'll give these guys a try. And I went in, and it was, they had some boots, but no, they weren't what I was after. And they had rack after rack after rack of camo-colored clothing. And then I ran into the filmy pink camouflage negligee for your hunting camp romances.
How elegant.
That was not the word that came to my mind.
Nor my own, but that's the first thing I thought of. I mean, that's, oh, Lord, that's really, really,
I mean, it was a two-piece set, you know, the little shorty baby doll peignoir and little pink ruffled camo bikini or whatever, and I'm like, and Agnes was with me, I went, oh, honey!
You gotta be kidding me, Bob. She said,
you put that down.
Oh, so they're trying to. Okay, well,
this is a broad spectrum, full on marketing thing.
God, they'll try to sell anything, won't they?
Sure, because money.
Sam ever heard of my life?
You didn't have to see it.
I don't think I'd want to tell you the truth.
And I suddenly began rifling through the hangers, trying to find one in Agnes's size.
Well, naturally.
All they had was 1X, 2X, 3X, and 4X.
Well, that's a little too large for her to be to be communal foe, as they say.
Well, I understand, but let's also take into account that usually the little woman doesn't go with you on the hunting trip. I mean, did you follow?
Yeah, but I guess they're encouraging the little woman to do so.
Oh.
I mean, they want to really have a love boat type situation out there in the middle of the woods.
Talk about hunting during the rut.
Really? My God, that's just, you know, the stuff I hear, I just don't believe anymore. I want to just change gears for a second.
Sure.
And get off here. I was watching Brett Carey, which comes on before CBS Sunday Morning, and for those of you who know who he is,
Bray Carey, media mogul of West Virginia, owns a bunch of stations. Yeah,
yeah, and he's a real right-wing type guy, and he had the head of the power company, Appalachian Electric Power, or America Electric Power, whatever it's called, and they were talking about the impact of trying to meet EPA standards, and he just said right there, they had the CEO as a guest, and he said, it's not going to cost us anything. It's going to cost the consumer.
Yeah. Well, see, and, among other things, for instance, Jim, the Americans for Prosperity, the Koch brothers-funded Tea Party group, they've got their little West Virginia chapter, and the other night I played the audio of that woman who says her husband was laid off because of the Obama war on coal. Well, I read some other stuff she wrote, and one of the charges that she made was that because of Obama's war on coal, the price of coal-fired electricity in West Virginia has gone up nearly double in 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you pay an electric bill, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it has gone up, hasn't it?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well,
I mean, I can't even speak about that. I just have to use monosyllables.
No, but the thing is, if one pays attention to, even attempts to pay attention to the news, one will find out that Appalachian Power is passing on is getting all these rate increases from the West Virginia Public Service Commission, not because of the Obama war on coal, but because back in 2008, when all the coal companies were flying high, Appalachian Power bought coal at historically high rates, thinking they could then sell off the electricity that they got by burning it to other utilities at equally high rates. It was a really stupid business decision.
Well, they're trying to pass that on now because...
Well, they have passed it on. They have successfully passed it on. And along the way, they've said, you know, it's that Kenyan Muslim socialist in the White House with a deep-seated hatred of white people that caused your power bill to go up.
Well, the answer that this guy gave, Brett Carey, was the fact that they had to put in scrubbers and stuff like that. And that's the reason that the power bills were going up and had gone up and had increased so dramatically. And he just sat there and just said, you know, we're going to screw you. We're going to just pass it right on to you. And, you know, I thought to myself, you know, if you were any kind of humane person, maybe you could decrease for-profit shares and let them take a little bit of the hit, too. No mention of that.
Oh, no. Well, no, because you don't smarten up a chump, Jim.
And here's something else that's, you know, lacking in humanity. I mean, they've got speaking of utilities. Now, Detroit has had a lot of its water shut off.
Oh, yeah. I noticed you mentioned that in an email a little bit earlier, and I knew that if you called in, I was hoping we would talk about it.
And it's because these people in Detroit, because they've been so economically burdened, they just shut them off without warning, period. People who were behind the water bill, and I think the water bill is like doubled, and you know, water is a
water of life.
Exactly. And I thought to myself, where is this country going? I mean, when you look at Detroit and what it once meant to this country and the industrial powerhouse that it used to be, and the people who live there, I mean, I guess everybody's been taken over by M&M and 8 Mile and stuff like that, but to shut off people's water and not even give them a notice or some type of thing in which they could make an arrangement to pay, you shut it off, period.
Jim, you have been with this program for a very, very long time, almost longer than anybody else.
Do what now?
I said, you've been with this program for a very, very long time, almost longer than anybody else.
Since the first night.
Do you remember the story we had years and years ago of the developmentally delayed young woman who brought her newborn baby home, and in the interim while she was at hospital giving birth, the gas company had come and turned off the gas, so the baby froze to death in that home? You remember that story?
Yeah, I do.
Capitalism, okay?
They don't care.
No, they don't care. And the same thing applies to Detroit. And the Detroit story gets even worse. This is a municipal water supply system, okay?
Right.
It is arguably owned by the people.
Not anymore.
Well, and what happens is this is all deliberate shock doctrine subterfuge to turn this thing around and sell it to a private company and turn it into a profit engine for shareholders.
Exactly.
And don't
exactly.
And who do you now? I'm not saying this for certain, but who do you want to bet is sitting there waiting to buy the Detroit Municipal Water System?
With the Koch brothers?
No! American Water Company. The same people that let 10,000 gallons of deadly poison go into 300,000 people's homes in southern West Virginia. They're the biggest private water company in the United States.
I didn't know that. Tell you the truth,
But it gets even worse. I'm so glad you brought this up because I haven't talked about it. We haven't talked about it, and it deserves to be talked about because it's another one of those signposts that point toward the ultimate collapse of everything we understood to be America. Just like Robert wrote from Australia in the first hour and said, when your teachers are carrying guns to school, you can pretty much say that your country is done. And I think there's a lot of truth in what Robert says, and this is another example of that. Not only is this a brutal way to take it out on the hides of customers, bear in mind that I think the average due and owing of people who were being cut off from the Detroit water system, I read somewhere that maybe it's around $150.
Right. It used to be 75, then it's gone to 150 over, or that's what I meant by double, I think,
And so thousands of people have been cut off from access to fresh water over $150. On the other hand, there's a whole bunch of deadbeat businesses on the Detroit system that have not been touched, Jim, and their overages are running into the thousands of dollars.
And they're not being cut off.
No.
I see. Well, does that surprise you?
No, it doesn't. But
even
though we're not surprised, Jim, I think we have a right to rage against the dying of the light, as Dylan Thomas once wrote.
No, I agree. You can delete surprised and say horrified.
In many ways, this is a country that is giving up on the idea of being a country.
This is a country that's literally giving up on the idea of being humane and fair. I mean, you know, it's basically
now
driven into an oligarchic state.
Now, Wall Street got a big old bailout. Where's the Detroit Water System's bailout? You realize all of that debt could be erased in a matter of a stroke of a pen.
Exactly. And that was referred to on MSNBC tonight as, you know, why can't the federal government take care of this?
And it's not like this country has not faced these kind of problems before. We've got a lot of friends who listen, obviously, from Cleveland, Ohio. And once upon a time, Cleveland, Ohio was in desperate straits. And they had a young mayor by the name of Dennis Kucinich.
I remember that.
And the money boys were leaning on Mayor Dennis Kucinich to sell off the Cleveland Municipal Power and Light Company, which again was owned by the people of Cleveland, and he refused to do it.
Yeah, I remember that quite well.
And out of his refusal, it even came to light that the mob put out a hit on Dennis. They never followed through.
They would,
but they never followed through because he was voted out of office. But guess what still exists, unless I'm badly wrong. The Cleveland Municipal Power and Light Company.
So it managed to survive the efforts to privatize it.
Yes.
And the mob was going to put out a hit on Mr.
They did put out the hit.
I wonder what the mob's thinking about what Pope Francis did. He excommunicated every damn one of them.
Depends on how seriously they take it.
I was just wondering about that, too.
Now, since you did bring up the Pope, I have a question for you. This is not me being an asshole. Did you see where he issued a blanket condemnation of the legalization of cannabis?
No, I haven't seen that one yet.
That just happened in the last few days, and I sat there and I was like, You know, I know he hasn't gotten around to endorsing the ordination of women or getting rid of the foolishness of priestly celibacy. But this was a complete non sequitur for all the other stuff he's talked about in regard to mercy and alleviation of suffering and caring about people who are in desperate straits. I hope he educates himself. That's all I can say. I hope he educates himself and comes back around. Do you know that Paraguay recently legalized the sale of what you and I would recognize as doobies or joints? You know, just across the border from his Argentina.
Well, that's definitely, in my opinion, a step in the right direction. You know, who knows to say, and who knows to even imagine what's going to be coming down the pike. But this afternoon when I switched on the news and saw the thing about Detroit, and then I heard your program about the Ignite Church, I thought to myself, my Lord in heaven. And unfortunately, I wish I had more to add of great intelligence, but I don't. But I'll let somebody else get on there who will perhaps enlighten this listening audience even more. But I just wanted to express my surprise and indignation and just absolute horror.
Well, thank you, Jim. I appreciate it.
All right, take care.
All right, have a good night. Bye now.
You too. Good night.
When we understand the Detroit water situation to be the commercial hijacking that it is, it's a lot easier to make sense of it. And remember, of course, that none of this could be stopped because the whole idea of representative elected government was destroyed in Michigan by the right-wing Koch brothers governor. What's his name? Rick Snyder? Isn't he the one who appointed the dictator over Detroit? Thousands and thousands of people have had their water cut off. And being as I am in West Virginia, and being as I have been familiar for quite a while now with issues relating to water, as a result of my involvement in the struggle against mountaintop removal, and also as a result of stuff that we have had happen to us here. I've been following the Detroit story with real interest. Because when there's no water, your life changes rather dramatically. You tend not to appreciate the simplicity of walking to the sink and getting water, or simply flushing a toilet, until one can no longer simply walk to the sink and get water, or simply flush the toilet. It is a different kind of living. But at the same time, dealing with some of those problems, if one has a sense for expanding one's consciousness, and that's not to say that I'm some sort of guru or anything, I'm not, but as an American, I find it at least somewhat beneficial to understand what billions of people on this planet contend with every day. Every day. And not until the water gets turned back on, but every day for the rest of their days. It's a form of privilege to not think about that kind of an issue. Oh, we've got water. Why don't they have water? By the way, Sister Jude did a little digging around to find out a little bit more about Heath Mooneyham, no, really, of the Ignite Church. And there's a bio of him over at their really slick schmick webpage. Heath grew up in Marionville, Mo. He and Kinsey, that's his wife, were married on February 2nd, 2002. They have four kids, Kendall, Elijah, Charlie, and Titus. His favorite color is green. His favorite movies include The Matrix Trilogy and Law Abiding Citizen. He enjoys all food. An interesting fact about Heath is that his nose has been broken 19 times. Well, isn't that special? Yeah. Yeah, you'll notice in all of that bio, there's not one word about Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant rabbi, semi-literate. Not a word about the death and resurrection of said Yeshua. Not a word about repentance. Not a word about the virgin birth. Not a word about miracle healing. Not a word about saving grace. Not a word about render unto Caesar. Not a word about peace. Not a word about sell everything you own, give the proceeds to the poor, and follow me. Not a word about if you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it also unto me. Not a word. Not a word. Lines open, 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178, if you want to jump in to this conversation. We got a lot of other stuff to work with this evening, though, without a doubt. Just don't know how you're going to entice more people to follow Jesus with a semi-automatic rifle. Dear God. Oh, by the way, jealousy is a brutal thing. It's a brutal thing whether it happens in Alabama or California or South Carolina or, in this case, Massachusetts. Jim, it's not always about sex. Email from Jim. Nose broken 19 times. What kind of sex life does he have? Oh, I think Jim gets the toaster tonight. No fair. Oh, I gotta get out the third eye bleach. Damn it, Jim. Okay, back to the story. What kind of sex life does he have? Oh. I'll be better in a minute. Snap out of it, Pop. Hey, thanks going out. Big thanks going out to Leo. Leo has joined in with Kate and Jay Cruzen. And yes, Leo says, hope this helps. It does indeed help. Thank you, Leo. And that means we're down to only $80 to go for this evening's fundraising. And thank you, Sal. Sal just made it 75. Sal is there just about every evening. Thank you, Sal. Thank you very much. $75 to go. Three at 25 or 10 at 750. Yeah, okay. It's one of those difficult numbers. You do the math. No, let's go back to Massachusetts just real quick. The Providence Journal reporting that 43-year-old Robert Amato saw Timothy Robillard with Amato's former girlfriend. He was looking through Robillard's first floor apartment window into Robillard's bedroom. That is when Robert Amato fired his Freedom Protector through said window and then plowed through the window and continued to discharge his Freedom Protecting Second Amendment remedy at Mr. Robillard, 45 years old, until he had killed Mr. Robillard dead. With one round remaining in the Freedom Protecting Second Amendment remedy, Mr. Amato then killed himself and saved the people of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts the cost of a trial and or imprisonment. Jesus. Because freedom. Because freedom. Well, let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
You're talking to me, huh?
Yeah, I'm talking to you, Bill.
Man, oh, man. I can't believe that some of the stuff this guy, this guy's biography is hilarious. 19 broken noses. Now, this is a guy entered I have some kind of a helmet to wear, number one. Number two, maybe stop picking fights. Number three, go take some boxing lessons. 19 broken...
Or as Jim points out, find a different way to have sex.
Yeah, that's... I've never been involved with that kind of roughness. I never had a woman punch me in the face, thank God. I look bad enough as it is. I don't, need any help. God, what a bunch. It sounds like he's founded this. This church sounds like of his. It's not of the Lord's creation. It's not more like it's of his creation.
From my standpoint, Bill, it is his creation because, well, to have it be the Lord's creation, you know where I stand.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the idea that it's even created on the so-called positive aspects of religion. I mean, they're hard to find as it is, but, my God, I mean, first of all, rattling off of... My God, I shouldn't use that term, I suppose, but he has a great idea. Hell, I used to rap off a turkey, But, of course, this place is being run by one, so I suppose, I just don't believe it. I'm still sitting here going, Jesus Christ.
I'll be here all night. Yeah, try the veal, right?
Oh, man.
And try the veal.
But the other thing you were talking about, Mr. Kucinich, and I had the pleasure of...
Muni does still exist, doesn't it?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Dennis ran for counsel on Lost, and he got a job working at the, for Dow Jones at Wall Street Journal, which is to say, I had a flunky job there that I got through a friend of mine, It was a good job for a musician because you were, they didn't publish on Friday. So you were working Friday, Saturday night. We had to go to work Sunday at 1 in the afternoon. I finally got fired because I was playing up in Detroit and couldn't get back fast enough to be there for a set. Plus the boss and I didn't, he didn't like me much, my supervisor, and then vice versa, you know. But Dennis came in there to get a job after his first council run. And then he made a successful council run, maybe a couple of terms before he became mayor. But yeah, that incident when he was mayor, that was, and I still don't understand why the mob would put a hit on the guy. What was it? What the hell did they have stand to gain? Unless they were hired, which wouldn't be the first time that someone was hired.
If I recall correctly, Bill, they had a stake in the attempted buyout.
Oh, that's well. Yeah, we hate to talk about that kind of a fact, don't we? That organized crime can be involved in public business. I mean, private business, yeah. I mean, how many saloons that I know in my life that were run by the boys? And, you know, I accepted that fact when I went in there and went to work. You see, I couldn't, who can back check on every bar owner you ever played for in your life, you know? And number two, who cares as long as the check is there?
Right.
I had one guy had a strip club on the west side, and he was running a place down near the where the new ballpark is, and he kept calling me on Fridays to cancel. So finally I told him I wanted a check in advance. So he wrote me a check, but it was a hot check. But what he didn't know is that my second wife had, we had connections with the sheriff in Lake County because my second wife ran the Battery Women's Shelter in Lake. So, you know, she was close to the sheriff and he took care of me and we called this guy and said, you know, what you did hanging that check on me in an account that's been closed for 8 months, that's a third degree felony. So the guy laid good on the check, I cashed it, and I never showed up for the job. Two can play every, you know, I can be as big a schmuck as he can, you know, when it comes down to business. But yeah, Dennis, they really put the heat to that young man. But I couldn't have, when he told me the mob, I said, what the hell is he, who was paying the price, you know? Like I said, I just finished that one Warren Esselman thing where, the Miller Road overpass attack on the Ruther brothers was paid for by Harry Bennett. That's a book I'd love to get my hands on. My uncle, we used to have a book called, You Never Called Him Henry, or They Never Called Him Henry, which was a bio of Henry Ford, the old man and the company, you know. Because I always said about Henry Ford, he had enough brains to pay his men enough money to buy the product they were making, for crying out loud. And that was what, if anything, made that system work, was when there was enough money making the rounds of the country that people were spending it and living decently themselves. Decent house, a drivable car, you know, and enough food.
And that's a gone America, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
That is an America that lives only in memory.
Yeah.
Because we have given up.
I'm actually smoking a damn cigarette.
That's an America we have given up on.
I've been around long enough to remember when you could actually get a job and make a living, for crying out loud. Coal mining was never a good living because of the inherent dangers of that job would keep me out of it. You had to have courage to go down there and do that work.
Nah, no, wait, Bill. No, there's no courage involved in that. There is nothing but the simple desperation of it being the only game in town.
Yeah, you got that right. Yeah, that's true. My family
had been in this area for 100 years. 150 years before the coal boys came in.
And the only reason that my ancestors went in and died like flies is because it was all the work there was. The land was stolen. It was poisoned. It was deforested. The subsistence way of living that had obtained for 150 years was gone. And you get one choice, go in the hole or starve.
Yeah, that's true.
And once you go in the hole, then you can't get back out of the hole because you really are in debt to your employer.
Well, I remember, they owe my soul to the company store, knowing what that was about.
I halfway wish that line had never been written. Because it has become a cliche, Bill.
Well, I guess I saw behind that, Bob. It was not a cliche. It was a damn miserable reality. Company script, company this, company that. It was like, you talk about state capitalism. How about, communism being state capitalism. Well, how about this kind of capitalism has all the evils that we were taught about communism, no?
Hey.
Somebody else controls the levers on everything, and you just stand there and hope you don't get hit when they pull the lever.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the thing. Before the reforms that came along with FDR, mild though they were, and which would subsequently be dramatically curtailed under Taft-Hartley. America was a fascist nation.
It sure was very close, wasn't it?
I mean, the Gilded Age that we talked about last night that Twain named was an age in which the power of the state was married to the power of business for the advancement of business. Now, if you ask the guy who invented fascism what that was, he'd say, that's fascism. The United States government, as it existed in the post-Reconstruction years, up to Teddy Roosevelt, is pure and simple textbook fascism. The fascists, I mean, you know where the word fascist comes from, right?
It has something to do with a seal of some kind.
No. It has to do with the bundle of rods and axes that were carried by the dictator, all ancient Roman officials were entitled to lictors, L-I-C-T-O-R-S, and lictors were bodyguards, ceremonial bodyguards, who carried bundles of rods and an axe over their shoulders as a symbol of power to keep away from the public official. The higher you rose in public office, the more lictors you got. And so the fascists adopt the fasces, and that's what it's called, the fasces, F-A-S-C-E-S, as their symbol, because it is a naked exercise of raw power. And so when you consider the use of troops on working people trying to organize, when you consider the use of the full power of the United States Infant Army Air Corps to put down a labor uprising, when you consider the Ludlow massacre in Colorado, that's the power of the state being used to advance the goals and the agenda of corporations, and that is fascism, pure and simple.
Oh, you mentioned we had the Pullman strike. It wasn't in Pittsburgh, and the Haymarket in Chicago, was it? Strikes that ended violently in the pre-1930s days. And, of course, you're talking about one that I had never learned anything about, the the open warfare between the coal miners and the whoever the governments and the companies could hire, you know. And that is, includes the National Guard. They could control that if they had to. Well, we, Kent State, I saw, Jackson State.
Yeah. Well, the militias were all wrapped into the National Guards early in the 20th century.
Yep.
And the ability to federalize them and call them out is, well, it's all Second Amendment stuff. I mean, the legislation that creates the National Guard is a direct outgrowth of the well-regulated militia language of the Second Amendment. Arguably, with the creation of the National Guard, the Second Amendment should have become nothing more than an anachronism.
True.
I mean, we've got another anachronism in the Bill of Rights, and that's the amendment about the quartering of troops in one's home.
Yeah, that goes back to the British Army days, yeah.
And there's all kinds of interesting stuff that goes with that, because, oddly enough, once you go into rebellion against the United States, all bets are off. How many Southern homes during the Civil War had compulsory quartering of troops? The boys in blue. And I'm not weeping over that. You go into rebellion, you commit treason, you know, the bets are off.
Well, the National Cemetery used to belong to our buddy Bobby Lee, right?
Right, a final slave marsh named Bob Lee.
Yeah. And the funny thing was, Lee was hardly ever at home, because the U.S. Army in those days was spread from here to hell.
Yeah.
15,500 men in the regulars when that war broke out.
By God, Bobby Lee didn't have a hard time finding Harper's Ferry, Virginia, though, did he?
Well, no.
He had a fine, well-honed understanding of treason against the state, the Commonwealth of Virginia, when he pulled the trap on old John Brown.
Well, he was an engineer, and, you know, those guys, they were the top outfit. They probably could read maps real well. No, I mean, I'm being facetious, but, yeah, he knew Virginia, that's for sure. He showed that over and over again. And Brown, you know, Brown did some work up in Escobula County in Cleveland. He was Ohio, which is not far from, you know, it's two counties away from where I live, you know. And he did some work up there and hiding in a farm or doing something, organizing. And his last, before he hit Harper's, he was staying at a place called the Kennedy Farm on a road that runs from Harper's Ferry to Sharpsburg. That's American history fascinates me, you know. But you really read on the head, as much as I admired Lee as a kid, I mean, he was a hero to me as a child. And I'm talking to 8, 9 years old at the most, you know. Now I look at it, and like you, I say it's treason. But they were dead serious about the problems with the electrical company. That company, Muni Light, if you track back, it may go back to a guy named Tom Johnson. Tom L. Johnson was the mayor of Cleveland. He's a millionaire. But if you ask Dennis about Mayor Tom Johnson, he's the guy that Dennis looked up to as a guy who was, he was one of those millionaires who was sometimes way ahead of the game and would do things that were the right thing to do, or, you know, the last thing you'd expect from one of today's millionaires, if you know, make the difference. There was a difference with some guys. And, Dennis was a fan of and those guys were so bad in Cleveland in the 1900s, one company would go out and lay down streetcar tracks, and the next night the other company would come and rip up the tracks and put down their own. I mean, there was a street war between these people, these corporations. Does anything ever change? We have a good character, 19 broken noses. Holy crow. I mean, my first conception.
And I'm sure, Bill, that he has a testimony to go with it.
Yeah, well.
About how he was on the wrong, he was on the wrong end of the law, and he was a drinking and a drugging and a carrying on and a fighting and a brawling, and then one day after a brawl, he heard the voice of Jesus saying, "Take up thy AR-15 and follow me."
Well, my luck, the voice of Jesus would be saying, "Look, you dumb bastard, when are you going to quit starting fights with people?"
Right. There you go. It ain't rocket science.
Well, I was taught to, if the Lord was so smart, he'd finally say, "What the hell are you doing, fella? Quiet down here. Leave people alone." Because I say, how the hell do you get 19 broken noses? Don't tell me he thought he was a boxing contender. He certainly wasn't.
Could have been a contender.
Like you said, maybe he was a barroom agitator. I've seen guys who were that way when they got loaded, and they were in no condition to do it when they were sober. When they were loaded, they just swing at somebody and fall on their ass, you know? Drunk. Oh, God. But to have that all be part of a church invitation? Are you kidding me?
I don't understand about 99% of Christianity, but even though I was raised in it. But this one just...
Some guy who wrote parodies would lay out something like that, you'd be doubled over in laughter. If it was meant to be funny. If some comic writer laid that down in a form of a monologue, you'd be laughing at the whole thing. But how the hell do you laugh at something like that?
Ain't no funny there.
This guy means what he's talking about. This guy's serious. It's time for me to, we used to talk about, you dig yourself a hole and close it and crawl into it and hide in it, stay out of the way of, because I hate to say it, but that stuff sounds insane. It's so just out of, and if this is what some people consider to be religion, then maybe it is time to get the hell out, you know? Is this a dangerous trend that you're seeing, or what?
It's a part of the transformation of what passes for the polity of the United States, and we are being transformed. Now, some would say this is a sort of expansion and contraction, or a wave form, or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know though. There's something terminal about all of this. When a bunch of gunned up goons in Nevada can stare down the federal government so that the lead goon, Cliven Bundy, gets to go on stealing from we the people, that's disturbing.
Well, if I was buying the things, that would be put a stop to, but it would be done quietly. But nobody is expecting the incident, and get him off the street and out of sight, and involved in the legal system before. Well, that's the trouble. That's the way they handled the situation in Texas, Bob, years ago. The way that was handled was, why the hell they just didn't pick the guy up on the street when he was out there, slap the irons at him and pull him in front of a judge and lay down a situation, so that, because that never should have come up, that battling it out with a house full of kids and such is not the way to handle the situation. It's just not. I'm not the kind of guy that was so peaceful that people could crap all over me. But don't spend 4 years in a children's home with 28 other young men around here who would bully the hell out of you if you didn't slap one or two of them around and they'd say, well, leave him alone, you know. They'd get the idea, this boy's as crazy as we are, let's leave him alone. And that's a damn shame, you know, to have to react that way. And that's not exactly a sane way to act either, but, guy's reputation in the bars, you didn't mess with this guy. Well, I had it pretty well licked in one place. We had, bouncers and the one owner played left end next to Randy White at Maryland, and, a lot of the boys were of that size group that were working for him, and that was their job, you know? Let them deal with it. Because that's part of the job. Look, tell me you don't get love notes from certain people in society, bud. And I'm being sarcastic when I use that word. You know, I know Mike Malloy's had some problems lately with, there's another guy I'd like to talk to since he's grew up not far from here. Not far from me, and I know the area where he lived. I know that area fairly well. But yeah, you guys catch hell, don't you?
Yeah. Not so much. Yeah. On my end, not so much for the radio business, because I don't pay attention to any of that stuff, and we don't allow right-wingers here.
Yeah,
but especially with regard to mountaintop removal, oh yeah, there have been threats. There have been overt acts.
The money and the power, Bob, you know, that's the problem. That's what's so tough about it, because that's why you really have to have a lot of it, and I hand it to you. You have a lot of courage. You're out there, here's a brick wall, and there's Bob Kincaid, you know, and the work you're trying to do with the AIC Act, it's so hard to convince. I don't know how you have to convince people of this stuff, but unless they watch one of their own family members croak, and then it becomes real, you know. When they hit somebody in their own home, in their own family, then they understand, then a lot of them understand what the hell is going on. And let me clear this line, there's a lot of people that...
All right, well, I'll tell you, it's
good to hear Jim. I haven't heard Jim in ages. It's good to hear him tonight.
Oh, he destroyed me with that nose line.
Oh, he's run out of money. No doubt about it. I mean, that was my first thought, too, is what kind of a hard case gets 19 broken noses? You're either damn downright stupid or
I don't think he was being persecuted for his Christianity, getting them 19 broken noses, Bill. You have yourself a good evening. We'll talk soon.
Take care.
Bye now. Our buddy Bill calling from Cleveland. As Bill noted, the line is now cleared. 304-574-8178 if you want to jump in. 304-574-8178. Let's see. Oh, yeah, a reminder, we remain $75 away from being even with the fundraising to the end of this date. Your choice at the PayPal button, headonradionetwork.com. That'll be traditional mail address is fine. Let's see. Where now? Oh, by the way, let's see. We can get rid of the Pope hating weed. Okay, goodbye. All right, that tab's closed. Just in case... Well, because somebody's got to keep up with this stuff, right? Dateline Fort Collins, Colorado, reported in USA Today by Ryan May Handy out of the Fort Collins, Coloradoan. I always thought it was Coloradan, but I guess there's an O before the A-N. A storage tank damaged by recent flooding has dumped 7,500 gallons of crude oil into the Poudre River. Is it Poudre, P-O-U-D-R-E, powder? Anyway, near Windsor, the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission reported late Friday afternoon, apparently not being too good at that conservationing oil and gas, right? COGCC spokesman Todd Hartman said, at this time, we know of no drinking water intakes affected by this spill. The release is not ongoing. Hey, the good news. I love this this verb. The oil has stained vegetation as far as a quarter of a mile away from the damaged tank, according to Todd Hartman. The tank is owned by Noble Energy. Well, of course it is. And they just happened to discover the spill, just like the discovery of electricity or radium or the circulation of blood or our heliocentric solar system. The spill, it's just a spill, was discovered Tuesday afternoon and later reported, nothing in here about how much later, to the COGCC. But of course, it wasn't the oil company's fault. No. Recent high river flows undercut the bank where the storage tank was sitting, causing the tank to drop and breaking a valve. About 178 barrels of oil dumped into the river. See, it was that mean old nasty river's fault undercutting the bank. No questions in this story about why the thing was sited so close to a bank, so close to the river that the bank could be undercut and cause the tank to, you know, collapse. No, of course not. Cleanup crews are working to absorb the spilled oil, and a vac truck is removing oil-filled standing water from a low-lying area around the tank. The well near the tank's been shut in. A second tank in the area appears to be unaffected. Appears. We hope. Pray. No word on what the oil, what are we calling that? Oil-filled standing water. No word on where that's going to be taken or otherwise disposed of. Charming, no? Yeah, no. Oh, so much. We find ourselves talking about firearms to a significant degree. And here's another one. From Americans Against the Tea Party. It's the story of Samia Poteet and Jeffrey Chandler, and not that Jeffrey Chandler. They went on a crime spree recently, allegedly, in Philadelphia. And here's the fun part. Some people go on crime sprees by knocking over convenience stores. Some people go on crime sprees by burglarizing the homes of people who aren't home. Jeffrey Chandler and Samia Poteet. Oh, no, they got smart. They would wait in a car. Yeah. They would wait in a car until people or groups of people would leave a certain gun range. Yeah, I said gun range. And they would exit the car and walk up to the people coming out from practicing with their freedom protectors and rob the freedom protectors of their freedom protectors. At one point, they had gotten away with no less than 9 weapons and a whole bunch of money. One 67-year-old man was shot. By the way, Kevin from Colorado alerted me to this story. Jeffrey Chandler is on the loose. 21-year-old Samia Poteet, who was not the shooter, apparently, has turned herself into the authorities. Jeffrey Chandler stands 5'10", weighs about 200 pounds, and has sleeve tattoos on both arms. The word stretch is tattooed on the outside of his right hand. He is considered armed and very dangerous. But it's the locus of the crimes that makes this story so interesting. This is cold and calculated. And this is also an understanding on the part of 27-year-old criminal mastermind Jeffrey Chandler, also known as Stretch, I guess, that good guys with guns can't stop bad guys with guns when the bad guys with the guns get the drop on the good guys with guns. These people are walking out of a gun range with guns when two people simply walk up and dispossess them of their firearms and their cash. The one guy who may have, the 67-year-old, who may have tried to be a good guy with a gun, got his ass shot for his troubles. I guess the NRA won't be featuring this on their Freedom Protecting page over at their little old website now, will they? America. Hey, congratulations, Jeremy in Vermont. Just got an update about 3 minutes ago from Jeremy in Vermont. Fried green tomatoes for dinner. Oh, yes, it's true. I have lived. Yum, yum. Oh, that had to be tasty. That had to be all kinds of tasty. With a little bit of bacon, ooh, bacon makes them better. Bacon makes everything better. Who am I kidding? So there's our food porn portion of the program. Fried green tomatoes for dinner at Jeremy's house. Y'all save us some, will you? Yeah. It is, in fact, 28 minutes past the hour. Our news ninja Gene says, I agree with Jim. 19 broken noses. Is this how Christ loved the church? Oh, I think we have quite possibly the most incorrigible family commune congregation of any program out there. What else? What else? What else? Well, you know, by the way, you do know that it takes a good guy with a gun to stop a bad guy with a gun. Only that's entirely untrue. A report coming out of Milwaukee from WITI. It's the story of a 4-year-old Washington, Wisconsin girl named Abby. Abby had a babysitter. The babysitter was 17 years old. Here in America, we're going to have to equip every home with a computer attached directly to NCIC so that we can run criminal histories on the babysitter. Because it turns out that Abby's mama and daddy, or mama or daddy, not sure, hired a 17-year-old sitter who then got a look around Abby's home and got to thinking, kind of larcenously. Abby was at home last Wednesday when a guy and another guy came bursting into the house, brandishing firearms, and ordered Abby and the girlfriend to get out of the house. When little Abby was interviewed, she said, "The bad guys stole my kitty bank. They stole my iPod. They also stole my Xbox and my Wii." So naturally, because there was a 17-year-old present, the police responding to the burglary, break-in, theft, invasion. Well, the 17-year-old told the police that a pair of armed black men burst through the door, ordered them out, and then stole all that stuff. And the sitter then said, well, I'd never seen the men before, but, well, one of them looked like an African-American man who lives nearby. His name is Cody Oaks. So, the police then do what police do, and they go over to Cody Oaks' home. He was questioned for hours, Cody Oaks was. In cuffs, no less. Why'd you do it? When'd you do it? Where's the stuff, Cody? Don't you realize this is going to go hard on you, son? Now, maybe if you confess, I can get a little lenience from the prosecuting attorney, but you're going to have to give me what I need, son! We already know you did it. The babysitter saw you. Somewhere along the way, someone decided to talk to little Abby, whose last name is not normal. And Abby said, it couldn't be Cody. Those bad men weren't the right skin color. They were white. At which point the cop said, what? And that's when the 17-year-old babysitter confessed that she had concocted the entire thing once she had seen what they had inside the home, and that it was her boyfriend and another guy who had come bursting in and stolen all the stuff. Little Abby's Wii and Xbox and her kitty bank and her iPod were all returned. Mr. Oaks is not necessarily feeling real happy. And yet, somehow or another, he's maintaining a bit of equilibrium. He said it's kind of sad because I don't think she, the babysitter, realizes the dangerous position she put me in. Abby's mama said she was proud of Abby. Literally in 30 seconds, she changed everything that had been going on for 5 or 6 hours. Abby was proud, too. She said, they got my stuff back because of me being the superhero. Whew. 5 or 6 hours with the police questioning you relentlessly because a 17-year-old had dropped the dime on you so that maybe they could hawk some stuff for her boyfriend. And no good guy with a gun anywhere in sight. No good guy with a gun in Chicago either. Which is just damned sad. not a lot of, and every day, every year, there are less of them, not a lot of World War II vets remaining. No. One less. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Story goes back to July 26, 2013. When police officers Clifford Butts, Michael Baugh, Craig Taylor, Lloyd Elliott, Charlie Hoskins, and Mitch Greer went to the Victory Center of Park Forest Assisted Living Center. Those, let's see, one, two, three, four, five, six. Those six police officers, and we covered this story a year ago. Those six police officers went to the assisted living center because 95-year-old John Rana, W-R-A-N-A, 95-year-old World War II veteran John Rana had refused to leave his room to go to the hospital for treatment of a urinary tract infection. The officers appeared. Mr. Rana, at 95, would not leave his room. The officers backed off, huddled up, did some decision-making, and then decided that the 95-year-old World War II veteran would be taken by force. That's when Officer Craig Taylor, at a range of about 6 to 8 feet, pointed a shotgun with beanbag cartridges in it at Mr. Rana, veteran of the Second World War. Officer Taylor fired 5 rounds at near point-blank range. Now, just because the words bean bags are in the account, don't think that that's somehow benign, because it still requires a hell of a charge, and there's a muzzle blast involved with getting those bean bags up to velocity so that they can do enough harm to stun a human being. And they didn't just stun Mr. Rana. No, hell no. They caused internal injuries and led to Mr. Rana bleeding to death. The Cook County Medical Examiner ruled that his death was caused by blunt force trauma to his abdomen. You know, where he had the urinary tract infection. Allegedly. Just for those who are interested in the statistics, a beanbag fired from a beanbag round in a 12-gauge shotgun travels at approximately 190 miles per hour. By the way, after they had pumped 5 rounds of 190-mile-per-hour beanbags at Mr. Rana, they subdued him and handcuffed him, put him in 4-point restraint, and then took him to the hospital. The excuse? 95-year-old Mr. Rana brandished a cane at them, which the 6 cops said might have been a knife.
on the best day in the last 15 years. No, let's make that 25 years. 30, 35 of his life, Mr. Rana could never have done an iota's damage to six young, brawny, tough police officers. Well, Mr. Rana's family has filed suit. And here is hoping, if there is any justice in this country whatsoever, that a judgment will be rendered against the six police officers and the town or village or whatever it is, sufficient to near bankrupt them. Note coming in from Kate. Subject line, green maters. Jeremy, the green tomatoes have to be fried in bacon grease. Oh, my. Good for you. You're now one with the rest of we who know what's good for us. A mess of catfish and cornbread would go real good with that, too. Might bear that in mind, Jeremy. Don't know why. I don't know. Did I throw myself out of the chat room? Sorry if I did. Oh, goodness. Titanic Tuesday has been a busy one, has it not? Down Texas way, you know that they've got, because we talked about, remember the story about how open carry goobers were coming up and accosting school children to tell them about the freedoms of open carry and their shooting guns and protecting freedom? Open Carry Texas has chapters all over Texas, Dallas, Fort Worth, San Antonio. Remember when they open carried to the Alamo? I guess there's an open carry El Paso and an open carry Austin. Yeah. Well, there's also an open carry Houston. And Houston, in many ways, is a sort of different kind of Texas. It's, you know, it's there close to the Gulf Coast. It's there close to New Orleans. Remember, it was close enough to New Orleans that victims of Katrina were evacuated from New Orleans to the Astrodome in Houston, which prompted Barbara Bush to lament that she was afraid that all those people seemed to be having so much fun in Houston that they were really afraid that they were going to stay. Yeah, that Houston. Houston has a neighborhood called the Fifth Ward. Houston's Fifth Ward is predominantly an African-American neighborhood. Open Carry Texas decided that it was going to have an open carry march through the Fifth Ward. Over on their Facebook and page, Open Carry Texas declared that it was going to be a big event. They were going to march through the historically, traditionally African-American neighborhood to show that gun rights belong to all. They also claimed that they were coordinating with a local church to have a canned food drive in association with their open carry freedom protecting march. They even cited a particular church with which they were coordinating. Oopsie. When the church was contacted, the church said, "What? We don't know anything about this. What do you mean? No, of course we wouldn't coordinate with an open carry march through the Fifth Ward." So suddenly, because the head of Open Carry Texas developed a scheduling conflict, in other words, the dog ate the directions, or he lost them,
or he heard his mother calling, or he had to wash his hair that day, or something. He had to oil his gun. He said he had a scheduling conflict, so it wouldn't happen. Yeah. David Ahmad is an activist. Jeez, it makes me never want to call myself an activist again with Open Carry Texas. Yeah, that's activism. Running around with a damn gun strapped across your back. Well, I tell you what, that's some activism. No, he said that it's going to be a big event. We're going to show that gun rights belong to all. And that's why we're going to walk through the Fifth Ward. He said, in order to respond directly to this challenge by a liberal anti-gun race baiter, we planned an event in Fifth Ward. It was a spur of the moment, we'll prove you wrong, rush effort. You know what? Rush effort and open carry of firearms should never, probably never be mixed. Our members don't plan their walks based on skin color. They plan them based on where they will be seen and be able to share our message with as many people as possible. Besides, what is a black neighborhood or a white neighborhood? A black neighborhood is a neighborhood where, if you go all pasty-faced and doughy, walking down it with a bunch of guns, people don't answer their doors. In fact, they lock them. 'Cause see, there's a history in this country of white people with guns coming into traditionally black neighborhoods. And there's just not a lot of historical moments where that's worked out well. They don't see color at Open Carry, Texas. You know what? If you're in Texas and you see a bunch of goobs walking down the street with guns, call the cops. Even if it turns out to be perfectly legal, and why it would be, I have no idea. Even if it turns out to be perfectly legal, it's probably a good idea to have the cops on scene just to make sure that one of these lawful gun owners doesn't suddenly transition into an awful one with horrible consequences for some member of the neighborhood, black, white, Latino, whatever. Because none of these open carry goobers has ever had a psych evaluation to see if they're sane enough to be doing that. There's no guarantee that they have any form of formal training. Nothing. So just call the cops. Let the cops, who are equally well armed, walk up to the goobs and simply ask them what their business is. It's getting a lot more fun to be an American. Used to be, if you saw a bunch of people walking down your street with guns, you knew that it was probably a problem and it might be necessary to defend your home. Now, it just may be some well-meaning, lawful gun owners. The problem is, you have to confront them to find out which is which. And if you guess wrong, there you go. Wolverines! Yeah. They're not so worried in Texas, though, about a bunch of white people walking through a traditionally black neighborhood. You know what they're worried about? Concentration camps. Yep. because they understand that freedom is under assault. We're going to check in with a, gathered in by Media Matters, we're going to check in with a June 20th radio interview on something called Raging Elephants Radio, hosted by Claver Kamau Imani, with Texas Values President Jonathan Sens. Because freedom, I guess.
All right, let's get back to Colorado. So you have a baker that does wedding cakes, and they say they don't want to do a two-man wedding cake, you know, with a little thing on the top, or a two-woman wedding cake with the little figurines on the top, or whatever.
Wait, is it, why is it, if it's a two-man wedding cake, why is it a little thing on the top, but if it's a two-woman wedding cake, it's a little figurine? Just need to sort that out.
And so...
Has this guy had broken noses?
So the homosexual couple, whether it's man and man or woman and woman, whatever, they go to this specially created commission to deal with this, file a complaint against the business, and so the commission says, no, you're going to make this cake, plus you're going to go to concentration camp, essentially. Is that what you're telling us, Jonathan?
Huh? Why say this, huh?
I'm assuming you guys have already chewed through all the hockey pucks. Let's just get through this. There's only a few minutes left in the program. We're going to make you make the bet. We're going to make you bake the cake and then go to a concentration camp. Because they're springing up all over America, the concentration camps.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, ah, he said that's right.
Something like that here in Texas. Rodney, I think it was a bill by Senator Rodney Ellis that dealt with hate crime stuff where they would have forced you to participate in an event of the quote-unquote community that you had offended. And so we testified against this legislation. It ended up dying on the Senate side. But, you know, I mean, this is what they want. I mean, there's no question. I've seen it. I've seen them try to do it with legislation here in Texas.
Now, damn it, we've got a lot of connections with Texas here at the Horn. Lots of members of the Horn Family Commune Congregation from Texas. And I feel fairly confident that one of you would have sent me the news article about the proposed bill in the Texas State House that would have created concentration camps for people who refuse to bake cakes for gay weddings that you can't have in Texas in the first place yet. Sorry.
State level, it is a goal of theirs to put people in jail that disagree with homosexual marriage.
Bust my buttons. Just cart them off to the gulag. Dang it. What are you in for? Murder. How about you? Arson. How about you? Wouldn't bake a gay cake. By God, you're a patriot. I mean, I killed somebody and he burned somebody's house down, but you stood for freedom, mister! Oh, I want that swirly straw and that bottle of tequila. Let's see if we can work in one more phone call. Hey, well, hell, welcome to the program, I think.
Hey, Bob, this is Alan.
What's happening, Alan?
Oh, I was just thinking about those gun nuts. I can't think of a country on the planet that's what you call civilized to let people carry guns around like that. Do you know of one?
Well, you're using an unfair adjective there. There's lots of places where you can just carry a gun anywhere you want to. Somalia, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iraq.
Yeah, but those countries, I guess, they're not that civilized, are they?
Well, I
think you call civilized.
Well, no, they're civilized. They just happen to be in the midst of a complete breakdown of their social structure. Brought about in large part because of a whole bunch of guns, but never mind.
Uh-huh. And that's what we don't want in this country, and I don't think the right wing wants that either, the breakdown of the social fabric. They don't know what they're in for if that happens.
Alan, they fantasize about it, buddy. Because they're going to have to defend freedom, and they got lots of guns and water put back and dried beans and rice and
and they got freeze-dried pasta from that place that Glenn Beck sent them to, and they're gonna hunker down behind the picture window, and they're gonna yell, "Don't tread on me," and they're gonna defend freedom.
It's not gonna be near as nice as they think it is, because they won't be able to go to the Wild World and buy whatever they buy there. The social fabric will be torn apart.
And it's going to be a great day for freedom when all that social fabric gets torn up, because you can't say social fabric without saying social, and if you say social, well, that's a big part of the word socialism.
Yep, that's right. Oh shoot, they don't know what they're in for. And both the left and the right want to change, but the way to change it, the left wants their change is through the voting booth. Then the right wants their change through guns.
Yeah, right. The left wants to change things by the ballot box, and the right wants to change things through the ammo box.
Yeah, and then they claim that Thomas Jefferson is on their side. I don't think Thomas Jefferson ever meant for this way, but do you?
No. No, not at all. Hey, Alan, we got to hit it. It's good to hear from you, though. Drive careful, all right?
Okay, thank you.
See ya. Bye now. Our buddy Alan the trucker. No, I don't think Thomas Jefferson expected that. Well, there weren't any big department stores, but no. I mean, we're talking about muzzle loaders, please. Not Black Rain AR-15s. Time to get out of here. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, everybody, for keeping all of this going. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, moderators in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox in Sydney, Australia, down under or up over, whichever way you prefer it. I refuse to be compass-centric. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. You know, Ben has just about single-handedly saved progressive radio on the Internet with his formation back in 2002 of the White Rose Society. WhiteRoseSociety.org is still where you go to get the podcast feed address for this little old program. Another reminder, Dr. Bill has changed his broadcast time to 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. He'll be back tomorrow with an ongoing examination, and this is fascinating, of the Scottish Enlightenment and its impact on the Declaration of Independence. Whoa. Yeah, because that gets talked about all the time over there on the for-profit media. Not. Thanks go out, as ever, to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acheact.org, acheact.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.